Hi guys, it's Lee here. This is just a little bonus edition before we get into the main filibuster show. Fortunately, it's just myself tonight. Matt and Tristan had other plans on. I'm talking to you tonight. Obviously, by the time this is released on Wednesday, it'll have been 4 days since Anton Yelchin passed away. When I found out the news tonight, I was sat with my girlfriend and, you know, typical couple, we're looking at our phones as opposed to each other. And then I see that Anton Yelchin has died in a freak accident. And, you know, it just 2016 has been a bummer of a year, hasn't it? From Alan Rickman to David Bowie, now to Anton Yelchin. It's been a hell of a year. But this one affected me more than others. Like, I love David Bowie. And when he passed away, while I was incredibly sad, he had lived a huge career that he left behind an amazing legacy. With Anton Yelchin, he has left a legacy that's so impressive by the age of 26, 27. It's, you know, I'm so jealous, I'm 29, I've done nothing. But Anton Yelchin, you know, I remember the first time I watched a movie with Anton Yelchin in it, and, you know, we have to go back to 2007, you know, nearly 9 years ago. Charlie Bartlett was a movie that really enjoyed. It was this kind of rebel without a cause, this neurotic student that's selling, like, prescription drugs to teachers and Robert Downey. And it was one of these movies I thought, wow, this is really good. Who is this guy? He had so much energy and youth and excitement about him, and I was like, oh, he's one for the future. And obviously, being the huge Star Trek fan I am, that when he was cast as Chekhov, I was like, oh, this is amazing. That for a lot of people, like the cast of Star Trek, the 2009 film, were like, who are these people? You know, we'll have to check them out. For me, I was like, oh, Anton Yelchin, you cannot believe how great this casting is. And he was brilliant in it. He stole the show. I remembered my friend at the time, we were watching it, and like, she fell in love with him. He had that energy and excitement about him. Like, everyone loved Anton Yelchin. Like, and in a way, Chekhov summed him up, that he had this youth, he had this bubbly face. He was a beautiful, beautiful man. He was so charming, exciting. You almost felt like this was the friend you wanted in your life. Like, you'd love to spend some time with someone like him. And then a few years later, you know, we'll exclude Terminator Salvation, and I thought he was quite good in that, actually. Like Crazy, this really nice British movie where Anton Yelchin falls in love with this American, and visa issues, so they have a long distance relationship. And it was one of the, you know, it's a really honest and, you know, lovely movie about young love, the pressures, the stresses and strains about making it work long distance. And he was showing so many brilliant, brilliant traits. And then, you know, over the years, like Fright Night, which is a movie which surprised me by how much I enjoyed it. He was excellent in that he was picking some really good choices that people talk about. Odd Thomas, it's a movie I've yet to see, but I'm going to check it out this week. And, you know, I've heard so many wonderful reviews about that. And when Into Darkness came out in 2013, obviously Anton Yelchin was one of my favourite aspects of 09, and, you know, he's a bit shortchanged. But, you know, I was happy to even get a little bit of him, that he was such a joy to be around. Him being there made you feel happy, that I'd love to have served on a crew with him. Then we got Only Lovers Left Alive, which is a brilliant Jim Jarmusch film about vampires, with Tom Hiddleston, Tilda Swinton, Mia Wasikowska, and Anton Yelchin. It was so good in that. And then, you know, only just this year, one of the best reviewed films from people like myself that follow the indie movie circuit, Green Room. What a performance that was, where he plays the leader of this punk rock band, and he was that youthful face that we love in 2009, that those little cheeks that you wanted to kind of touch, that, you know, that youthful face, that kind of bum fluffy face that he had. He was growing into his face, that as you do in as you get into your late 20s. And he was so good in Green Room, and the fact that this is his kind of last movie, it's almost like when you see his performance as this punk rock singer, he's facing off against Patrick Stewart, who's this neo-Nazi. He was really growing in something. He was really developing a confidence. He was branching out into so many exciting roles. And, you know, when I saw that movie, like, I would have seen that movie if it got terrible reviews just because he was in it. He had earned that reputation in my eyes, which is hard to achieve, of being a name that if I see it on a poster, I want to see this guy in a movie. And I just feel really sad at the moment, thinking that we've lost him, that, you know, I don't know why it's affected me as much as I have, that I think because he felt like one of us, he was that kind of boy next door, that he struck gold. He got to be the guy on the Starship Enterprise. He got to be starring in these movies. He was so sensitive, and you almost wished, if you were a guy, that was who you wanted to be like. You wanted to be like someone like Anton Yelchin. If you were a girl and you probably wanted to have a boyfriend like Anton Yelchin. If you had a parent, you probably wanted someone to come home with an Anton Yelchin, or you had someone like him, like a son. And when I see so many people talking about him tonight on, like, my social media, it's just exploded with people quoting him from movies and paying little tributes. And I always thought, like, my Anton Yelchin little fan club was only me and a couple of other people. Like, I never thought people loved him as much as perhaps I did, and how wrong I was. And it's really touched me to see all the tributes today from the fellow co-workers on Star Trek to film fans, to people who maybe just knew him from Star Trek, or all these different things. That someone, I wish said it better than me. You know, the fact that he's part of a Star Trek movie means that he's going to live forever. And that is something that brings me a bit of comfort, to know that while I'm going to recommend other films of his to people for the rest of my life, really, that something like Star Trek will live on forever, that he will always be part of that. And I think Star Trek Beyond will be a very emotional experience in a few weeks' time, that it's different from, say, when Heath Ledger died. And, you know, I remembered when I found out about that, and, you know, I thought Dark Knight was going to be an emotional experience, but the fact that his face is hidden kind of gives you a bit of a barrier. But when you look at him on the screen, and that excitement, that smile, that energy, knowing it's been extinguished in such a freakish way, makes it very sad. And, you know, he leaves behind such a great legacy of films, you know, from what he's done in 10 years, you know. It makes me wonder what you've done in the next 10, the next 15, the next 20. And I think of the cast of Star Trek Beyond probably just now, that, you know, they're going to have to go on this press tour, and they're going to have to answer questions about their best friend dying and all these sorts of things. And, you know, that brings a bit of sadness to me as well. And I'm going to write a blog in the next few days, hopefully celebrating Anton Yelchin's movies and recommending the ones you perhaps may not have heard of, or, you know, giving some of my recommendations for you to seek out. Because I think this week, I'm only working 3 days this week, I'm gonna be definitely watching a lot of Anton Yelchin movies. And yeah, I think I'll always remember him as, he was the best of us as fans, and the best of us as a people, you know. And, you know, when you look at the world these days, it seems to be falling apart in the West. And, you know, there was one thing that you could rely to make you smile was Anton Yelchin, and, you know, it's done now. It's over. It's a short journey. There's going to be no more. You know, I started this journey with him, with Charlie Bartlett, and, you know, if it's effectively going to finish in a few weeks now with Star Trek Beyond, it's the end of a journey, and I'm sad to be getting off this ride. And, yeah, I've gone on a bit longer than I should have, and, you know, thanks for bearing with us. You know, this was obviously recorded a few days earlier, and as even though he's gone, we will remember him, and live long and prosper, Anton, and go boldly. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Lee Hutchison.
And welcome to the Senate floor.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
So today, as it's no doubt caught everyone this week, this month is Pride Month, and while here at the Nerd Party we like to talk about geeky culture and geeky events, a lot of the time culture influences art and art influences culture, so it felt like a good time to stop and take a kind of moment to think about how is LGBT issues reflected in movies today, or not reflected in movies today? Is Hollywood doing as much as it can to represent minorities? Is independent cinema perhaps the place that's exploring it best? So me and Matt thought we'd have a chat, just see where things go, and talk about the issues that perhaps are reflected in Hollywood, because as I say, won't have missed anyone in the past few months that minorities, whether it's lesbian, gay, transgender, Asian, black, have all taken issue with Hollywood. Are they doing enough? Are they whitewashing? Is every movie franchise just going to be white hetero males? Should movies be recast, say James Bond becoming a female lesbian, or should it be just a straight heterosexual male? So we're just going to maybe just see where things go and touch upon it. Now for you, Matt, looking at the way Hollywood has been for the past good few years now, mm-hmm. What's your initial thoughts when people say Hollywood's not doing enough for the LGBT community? Do you think that's something that's right, or is it kind of maybe a bit overstated?
It's hard to say, because Tristan and I have had this conversation kind of on mic and off mic in our private conversations, where there's a lot of uproar these days about representation in films, and sometimes I think that people, in my opinion, are taking things a little too sensitively and prejudging something before it even comes out these days. But I will say that, when we were preparing for this conversation, Lee, it was initially actually your idea. And it took me by surprise that, we usually talk about film on this podcast. And even as someone who is gay and who has sought out sort of not gay cinema, but representations of gay people in culture, I was having a hard time thinking of a lot of movies. So I it's hard to say, but yes, I think to a certain extent it is underrepresented in Hollywood these days, and in the past, obviously in the past. But I would say so.
Yeah, you often get it. I've often found that, take for example, in the most recent year, probably the biggest high-profile movies to discuss, gay characters was obviously Carol and Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah,
that did incredibly well at the Oscars. And, still to this day, how Crash won over Brokeback Mountain, they'll never know. But it always seems when those two movies came out that this is a watershed moment. That it's showing that movies about gay characters can be incredibly popular, incredibly successful, and aren't an issue for the majority of the public. Whether those movies didn't make the greatest amount of money, right, but were well represented critically and, in terms of, plaudits for Oscars nominations. So there seems to be, When I asked you this the other day, when I was like, I think this would be something that could be, really, really good to discuss, because I always believe that the best films and best TV shows represent the culture a lot of the time, from Star Trek discussing race issues in the 60s to modern day TV shows, where we more think that they commonly represent issues that are facing the Western world in terms of terrorism and moral dilemmas since 9/11. And when you said, I'm really struggling here to think of some movies and characters. And I thought for some people that would be, wow, that's killed the conversation potentially dead. There's nothing we can discuss. But then that highlights for me that there is a serious problem. Why is there a serious lack of characters? That why do you feel that Hollywood isn't doing enough? Is it a lack of confidence? Is it a lack of original material? What's your feeling, firstly, on why not?
I think part of it is to do with, you know, the gay community certainly has come a long way in social acceptance within the last 20 years, certainly within the last 10 years. But, you know, as we saw in from even, you know, the tragedy last week in Orlando, we still have a long way to go before we're totally accepted. So I think that Hollywood likes to get behind popular causes, but I also think that they're a little bit, as we discussed in the franchise episode, they're a bit risk averse, where in terms of mainstream blockbuster cinema, they don't want to do too much to upset anybody to maximize their profit. That's why I think that you're going to see more of an LGBT representation in Hollywood when it comes to the prestige pictures and the smaller films. I mean, you being more familiar with independent cinema than I am, have probably run across more gay characters than I would have watching my mainstream stuff. I mean, even you know, you brought up Star Trek. Even Star Trek, a show that has always represented current social issues at the time, has not really touched upon it. They've done subtle metaphors for it, but they've never come out and outright done an episode or had a character. And, you know, I'm not asking for a character to be flamboyantly gay, and that's the only thing that defines them, but they never had a character with same-sex attraction, really, on Star Trek.
I always remember, I don't know if you remember it, Matt, I remember when On the Brink of First Contact coming out that Lieutenant Hawk was going to be, there was talk that, I don't know where it came from, but that there was talk that he was going to be this gay character.
In the initial script, I mean, in the initial idea for the character, and actually if you read the books that have Lieutenant Hawk in it, he is gay.
Oh, really? And how in the book, like I never read the first, I think I read the First Contact book as a kid, but how did they say in the book show that he was this homosexual character on the Enterprise?
Well, I don't know if it was in the First Contact movie novelization, but they had other books, fictional books that took place before First Contact on the Enterprise-E, and he's shown to be the character that he was in. It's exactly what I kind of would have wanted. He's shown to be the character that he was in First Contact. There's nothing really different about him, except for the fact that when he goes back to his quarters at night, he happens to be going back to another man who's working in security.
See, I remembered when I watched First Contact a few months ago with a friend of mine, and I went, oh, see this guy here. This was going to be the first gay character in Star Trek, but it never happened. And they went to me and went, how do you know he's still not gay? And I went, well, he could be. Everyone on that ship, that apart from the main characters, any one of them could be gay. But it's really just lip service if you just say, as after the fact, they went, oh, this character in the background, see him, he's actually gay, but you don't really make any use of it, then it really is an almost waste of time. You can have it as your headcanon, but you don't really make a statement or a point by just saying it after the fact, that you don't get plaudits for saying, oh, this is a gay character, but not actually doing anything with it and actually not using it as a representation. You know, you're really just, you know, there's nothing out of it.
Right. And I think that there's this misconception that there is like this all or nothing mentality. Like I said, if there's a gay character, you must highlight their gayness. And I'm not saying that necessarily. I'm just saying, like, do what they did with Hawk in the book. It just happens to be a part of his character. There wasn't, like, an episode centered around it. He wasn't being persecuted. He was just treated like everybody else. He just happened to be homosexual.
Yeah, that's the Gene Roddenberry future, really, isn't it? That you've got a character that's accepted, just like a Klingon the bridge, it's not a big deal. There may be episodes where it addresses it and discusses it and elaborates upon it, but that, for the most part, it's just something that's there. It's just part of the character. As much as Picard enjoys reading a book, this guy's, you know, a homosexual, it's no big deal. It's just part of what informs the character. for me, when I think of why there's underrepresentation, I think part of me is a bit more concerned for the future, thinking about it over the course of this week, because I think of, you're right, that it is more independent movies that seem to represent it, to really devote entire movies to talking about gay experiences, whether they're positive, negative, people that are struggling with sexuality and relationships. And I fear that, I think in terms of Hollywood, I have a feeling it might get a little worse. I think that with Hollywood at the moment, you're spot on. It's so risk averse that everything's almost by committee, that you've got to try and get as many people into the cinema as possible. And while America is a very divided country, it in places for views on LGBT rights. I mean, we only have to look at conversations that have been happening in the political arena in the past few months during this election cycle to know it's sadly still a huge issue.
Certainly in the past week.
Yeah, and we'll definitely touch upon that. And for me, I worry that we've recently seen that China's investing more and more in Hollywood cinema. And China is one of the most conservative countries, yeah, really, in the world. If they're investing all this money in, say, Transformers, the new Paramount franchise, whatever that is, all these different studios, do you really think they're going to put characters that would divide a Chinese market? Because we only need to look at just now that how big the Chinese market is. Jurassic World made a killing in China.
Yeah.
Warcraft, which hasn't really set the flames alight here in the West, is like one of the most popular movies of all time there.
Right. And something like I think the highest grossing movie ever in China is Furious 7 still.
Mm-hmm. And while that is a diverse movie, in terms of like LGBT issues, that's something that is not part of the Chinese culture in a positive way.
Yeah, I would say Furious, it's a diverse movie, but it's not exactly pushing any boundaries. You just happen to have, you know, some Hispanic actors, some African-American actors. But that's about the extent of that. You know what I mean?
And for me, I worry that influence could, that while America and the West is largely acceptant and tolerant of gays for the most part, it's hard to, you know, there are huge areas where there's problems, but I think Hollywood itself would be more accepting to gay characters, to transgender characters, all these different minorities. But now I worry that this Chinese influence could be, with the politics of the Chinese government that are investing so much money, and now the reliance on making money, because it's getting harder and harder for, you know, we may think that, yeah, Captain America, Batman, all these movies make a billion, hundreds and hundreds of millions, but that's not really without the kind of the Far East market really taking it over, because they're not making money on, you know, cinemas as much now. It's more kind of maybe the home release. So now the cinema market is more dictated by the East, and movies will start going through those things, whether it's films shooting abroad. Was it Transformers shot in China?
Yeah, Transformers shot in China. People are trying to find ways to integrate China into cinemas now, into movies now, hoping that it will make more money. I mean, there was a whole subplot to Iron Man 3 that was shot only for China.
Oh, really? I never knew that. Things like that concern me. So while I think Hollywood is in a position that they can do more, I now worry about the outside influence, that they're not just thinking about the American market, the West market now, that they've now got to think about a hugely more conservative market when they're making these big Hollywood films, and it's going to be harder and harder to perhaps get that LGBT representation within movies, and that is a pause for thought, I think.
Yeah, you know what? I until you mentioned it, and it makes complete sense now, I never considered the Chinese influence in representation in Hollywood, because you're absolutely right. For a state that supposedly believes in communism, which in my mind is a really radical thought. Like, that's not conservatism at all. They are a very conservative country. So, yeah, and with them being, I think they stand right now as they're the second biggest market for movies in the world behind the U.S. And that divide between number one and number two is growing shorter. So, yeah, I never thought that that was a possible source, but it makes complete sense.
I mean, we've touched upon it a few times, that the horrific, horrible scenes that we've witnessed this week in Florida. I mean, I woke up on Sunday morning, and quite early in the morning, and I was just sat, and I'm a CNN, MSNBC kind of junkie, so I sit there watching the news, expecting to just see the latest that's going on in the primaries and such like, and to see the news of what happened. And it was just so sad to see that. You think that us in the West are, you know, this progressive place, that we look at places like, we're talking about China here, that their rights on LGBT and human rights, and, you know, we're kind of like saying, oh, it's disgraceful, really, when we only have to look at the headlines in the UK and America this week about independent voices and LGBT and how they've been silenced by guns. And it makes you sad that you look at these people, and I think that Hollywood is almost as bad as... I watched an interview where it had Anderson Cooper, and he was... I don't know if you've seen it. Anderson Cooper's interviewing the district attorney.
The attorney general, yeah.
Yeah, he's interviewing her, and he's saying, you know, I've spoke to LGBT people, and they're saying they don't really like you. Your policies that you've excluded them, you've put them down, all these different things. And she's like, oh, well, you know, I was just sticking up for the thing. But you know what? I'm here to represent them now. I'll do all these things for them. And the amount of politicians that have come out this week and said, oh, horrible, horrible. Whether it's someone like Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, who you don't even need to look far to see what they've said about LGBT marriage, yeah. LGBT issues, that it is such a huge political issue. And while these people are making these disparaging comments about equality, is Hollywood just as bad as these politicians that people like Anderson Cooper are pulling up, that they talk a good game about LGBT and wanting to represent them, but by not really representing them, are they just as complicit as anyone else? Are they almost whitewashing a community? How many times do we see the odd comedy here or there where the gay character in a mainstream movie is the wacky funny guy?
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up and it was always Will and Grace. Ha, oh, it's kind of funny. And it's the gay guy living with a straight woman. And But where's the real representation? Where's the real homosexuals, the real transgender people? Where's the ones that aren't just the jokes, the comic relief, the drag queens? Where's the normal people where it's just run of the mill? Are these people complicit as well?
In my mind, I mean, because I have to, you know, with American politics, I have to live and breathe it every day, obviously, especially since our country's gearing up for election season. But I have a hard time equating the movie industry with the politicians at this point. But that being said, I do feel that they perhaps are a little complicit. Although I will say, and this is something that even you and I have touched on privately, there seems to be this push. Okay, so they're underrepresented, but there seems to be this pushback from more progressive people that everything should be changed to represent the community. And you mentioned James Bond at the beginning of the show, something like taking a character that's been one way and radically changing them to fit a progressive standpoint is not necessarily something that I completely agree with either, because I think characters have been a certain way because that was the way that they were created at their inception. I do think that more originality when it comes to this would be more helpful. If you create new characters that are homosexual from the beginning, I think that's the way to go rather than changing existing ones, like whether it was the give Captain America a boyfriend, or the give what's her name from Frozen a girlfriend. I don't think you need to go that route. It would help. I mean, like, it would certainly be mainstream, but I don't think you need to go that route. What I'm thinking of more, and this, I know this isn't movies necessarily, but certainly in television suffers from the same problem, I think. Something like creating a gay character on the new Star Trek, for example, that's coming out in 2017. Certainly a possibility. It would be an easy way to go because it's supposed to be a new crew. It might be a new crew every season from what we've heard. And one of the main showrunner is gay. Brian Fuller is gay.
That's right, yeah.
So now would be the perfect time more than any time to do it. Something like that, I think, would be more helpful than turning an already existing character who's been written one way for a long time into something completely different just to serve an agenda.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. I mean, obviously, as a white heterosexual male, I'm bound to agree with that one. But I think, yeah, I think that has been a bit of an issue. And I look at, like, with movies these days that, like, I think people, you're right, that people are wanting to, that it's almost like they think Hollywood is just a small sandbox, that we've got the James Bond character and we've got Batman and all these different people. And you know what? We can't deny these characters are mostly white heterosexual males. Sure. And, you know, Joe Public average, you know, there's not much, you know, it's not much of a rainbow of colors, nationalities, minorities. And that is a flaw in itself. But do I necessarily blame those characters? No. I mean, I believe that James Bond should be a white heterosexual male. You know, if he was turned into a black actor, I really wouldn't have much of an issue.
Neither would I.
You know, as long as it was the appropriate one. I don't believe in the Idris Elba thing. I think that's kind of a bandwagon that people have jumped on without kind of really thinking, is he appropriate? Because he's far too
old. Yeah, I was going to say he's a little too old at this point.
But I firmly believe is that we need more new, is making new characters. And it is hard to make a franchise straight from scratch. You know, it helps having a pre-market already built in. But I think that's what we need is new characters, is new, fresh people that people can look up to.
Or the thing is that, like I said with the Star Trek thing, don't create a new franchise, but introduce a new character within a pre-existing, already big franchise that can be gay.
Absolutely. That, I think that's what's needed is introducing these characters. And, you know, people talk about, say, Bond, for example. Bond, while he is a white hero, things change around him. That his attitude, if we look back at the 60s, you know, he is almost raping women.
Yeah.
You know, but now it's a more progressive Bond environment. So I believe that creating new characters is good, because even from my point of view, I would be so bored if I just saw, okay, we've now got the gay Bond, we've then got the Hispanic Captain America, all these different things. I want to see those kinds of characters represented in new franchises, new stories, new adventures. I don't want to be just tuning in every few years to see Captain America given a facelift and a cosmetic kind of change. I want to see the new characters, the new blood. I want to see kids growing up that, like, we have Miles Morales there in Spider-Man. And I think with the Spider-Man that's just coming out, I think there was a good case to make for Miles Morales perhaps being introduced.
Yeah, and I think that even though that didn't happen, I'm willing to bet, because Disney's been kind of the leader of the franchises at this point, I'm willing to bet that that's somewhere down the pipeline for them.
Yeah.
Because I think that there, with Spider-Man, given how popular the character is, they're playing the long game, where once Tom Holland, once they can't either afford him or once he ages out of the role, they're going to give it to somebody else.
Yeah, like I totally get why they picked Spider-Man. And beyond, like, I would do the same. If I'd spent all that money negotiating, I want Peter Parker on screen. I want the immediate reaction.
Plus, it would be a chance for them, because they never controlled the character in film before, to finally put their stamp as, no, forget those other two. This is the definitive version of Peter Parker.
Exactly. And as we know better than anyone, Marvel loved the long game. So I am agree with you. I think there would definitely be something in the pipeline that, like, when I look back as, like, a kid, and I feel that, like, the new characters and, you know, people that, you know, it is hard to get that kind of break. When I was like a kid, there really wasn't much gay characters really on the screen that, from what I watched religiously, you had, you know, Frasier was a great show for using gay characters, that it was perfectly normal part of the scene. It had fun with gay stereotypes, but it was never from a sinister place. It was, you know, that these characters were, you know, you wouldn't be surprised at times if they were gay, and pretty much the entire cast of that show, bar Kelsey Grammer, male-wise, were gay. And I think that was always a show where I saw homosexuals represented really well. I always remember Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want a good one, great. Watch the Patrick Stewart episode.
Yeah, Big Billy's. And I always think one of the ones I always remember as a kid, and it was such a huge deal, was the Tara and Willow storyline in season Buffy. 4 of Buffy. I don't know if you were ever a Buffy fan.
My dad was, so yeah.
I remember that being a big deal, like reading it in like the magazines, like, oh, they're going to have a gay character, Willow's going to go gay, and you're like, oh, and I really liked Oz, but then Oz had left, and then Tara came in.
Here's the interesting thing, because you bring that up, I think because... I hate to put it this way because it sounds like I'm being insensitive, but if you think about it, because most of the decisions are made by heterosexual men in Hollywood, although there's a female representation slowly climbing up, but because most of the decisions are made by them, I think it's easier for a lesbian relationship to be represented in mainstream because, hate to say it, but for some people that's more titillating.
Yes, you're true, isn't it? Like, oh yeah, like a threesome has got to be two girls, and you know that joke is probably true. People will tune in to see probably a lesbian kiss as opposed to a gay kiss. That there was there's a soap opera here in the UK, Brookside, you know, set in Liverpool, and it was like it got big attention. It was like the first ever lesbian kiss. It wasn't the first ever gay kiss. You know, I never really thought of it kind of like that. But yeah, you're right. It is easier to say, it's two girls getting it on. Tune in this Thursday on the WB. Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, if it's two attractive women, then I foresee less of a problem than if it was two men. Because I think there's a bigger... in my opinion, there's a bigger stigma with it when it's two men.
Yeah, that, you know, in terms of like, even you look at the politics of it all, that... there's obviously the issue of bathrooms in America, and I mean, you look at people and they're talking about how, okay, so you've got a transgender person going into the bathroom, and it's always portrayed as it's the men, like a man's gonna go into your bathroom and they're gonna, you know, they can do things to your kids. That it's always portrayed as the men. It's never that, oh, it's never the lesbians are the danger. It's always the gay men that kind of seem to get demonized, the transgender men that identify as women, that even though they're not classing themselves as women, they're still getting tarred with the brush. Yeah. That they are males, they're sex offenders, they're potentially pedophiles. It's ridiculous, really.
And that's not to say, like, I'm not standing up here and saying lesbians have it easier than I do, because we're all in this together, the struggle for equality. I'm just saying that they're more likely to be represented. But even that, is that true representation, or is that just, you know, white, you know, heterosexual man having a bit of a fantasy played out on screen? When you think about it, really, is that so much better?
I think you definitely make a good point. I would say in terms of Joss Whedon,
I think he's off the hook, but I'm just saying.
You look at his career and he has credibility in bucket loads in my eyes for...
What I would point the finger at more is not so much like someone like Joss Whedon, who I know is a good guy. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like the executive at the WB who said, "Oh yeah, let's put that on." You know, who gave it the go ahead?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's a really good point. That where do you see, like, in 5 years' time? That where do you think that? Do you think we are going to have better representation of... Well, we've obviously just said it's maybe more acceptable for lesbian characters to be represented. Do you think that in a few years' time we'll get that more homosexual male representation in movies, you know, out with perhaps the comedy character, that it's going to get properly represented?
I hope so. It's hard to say whether it's going to be the next 5 years or the next 10. I think it's going to happen soon. But I think it's always been, when it comes to minority representation in Hollywood, it's always been a long process. I mean, the minority, different ethnic minority, it's still not perfect, but it's come a long way in the last, century, where, take African Americans, for example, that was a long process for them. They went from being slaves and maids in movies, to take it out of the step and fetch it days, to the point where, in the 70s and 80s, they were like the wisecracking best friend. And nowadays, I mean, like I said, it's not perfect, but you have films like Furious 7 or even something like Straight Outta Compton, where, stuff like that would not have been made, I think, back in the 70s, unless it was blaxploitation. So, it's a process, but they're getting there. So, and I think, with LGBT being a newer issue, quote unquote, than minority, ethnic minority representation, we got a ways to go, but I think that the culture that we live in today is going to push the process along a lot further. So I'd say, I hope, within the next decade, there'll be more representation. And even then, we've had our milestones. I mean, you brought up Will and Grace, and yes, I get that it's a stereotype, and it's going for more wacky comedy, but that was still a huge step forward. Because
yeah, it was big at the time, wasn't it?
Because you never saw a series centered around someone who wasn't straight. It comes in baby steps. They went from being the gay people went from being the seedy character in 70s dramas to kind of having a bigger impact on television. And then you got Ellen DeGeneres had her sitcom where she came out on air.
That was a huge deal. I remember that actually really well in the 90s. Huge.
And she got backlash for that, but it was an important step because I don't think there would have been a Will and Grace had that not happened, because that came after. No. And, you got more and more, slowly things started to happen. So it's a long, drawn-out process, but I think that we're getting there. I think things will get better.
Absolutely. And that's what you hope for, that I think movie culture, I hope is influenced by events that we've seen in the past week, that it's okay to put as a hashtag on, the internet, like We Are All Orlando, we're all, like these politicians that say they stand with the gay community. But like Hollywood needs to represent it more. It's okay to give it lip service and say these things, but if you don't back up, then it's just another false promise, just like a politician, that you need to put the money, you need to invest it. If you all these Hollywood studios are making killer money, whether it's on Warcraft, Captain America, all these things, that if you want to do it, if you really are committed to putting in these gay characters, and you're guaranteed to take a loss compared to, say, a normal movie about Captain America, run-of-the-mill kind of guy, all these things. If you're going to make a movie and some people are just not going to tune in, still put the money behind it. And you're making enough money elsewhere to even out. You may not have the big pile of cash, but you've got enough that you can make the statement. Not everything needs to be a box office success. And that's where I think that indie movies get it a lot more easier. That we spoke about it a few weeks when we were doing franchise chat. And it's easier, because no one talks about the box office when these movies come out. No one talks about the box office of Carol, Mysterious Skin, Brokeback Mountain, and all these things. They talk about it was a great movie and it gets the word of mouth. People tune in, people watch it. And that's more important. It doesn't always need to be the money. The money isn't always the big thing. You've got plenty of it. Make your statement, stand by it. Don't worry about the bottom line all the time. You can afford the hit.
Yeah, I completely agree. I will say that the prestige pictures that I've seen more recently have integrated the gay storylines into a movie that I would hope that's the blueprint for. I mean, because the most recent thing that came to mind that I saw it in was The Imitation Game 2 years ago with Benedict Cumberbatch. That character obviously was gay, and that was an important part of what happened in his life, but they were able to integrate it into the storyline where it didn't feel like it was inorganic. It felt like it was an integral part of the story, and without, you know, jumping up and down and calling attention to it, I thought they integrated that very nicely. That's one of the ones that really kind of spoke to me in the last couple of years. I mean, Lee, what are some things that, because you watch a lot more indie cinema than I do, what have been some of the LGB representations that you thought have done extraordinarily well within the past few years?
Yeah, I mean, for example, obviously Carol was the big breakout movie, but one of my ones that I always think was a fantastic representation was a movie called Mysterious Skin. Came out in 2004 with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Brandy Corbett, I think his name was. It was all about Joseph Gordon-Levitt, really kind of one of his first major breakouts post Third Rock from the Sun, where he plays a young gay rent boy that's working in New York, and it's all about these two characters that have endured a really horrific sexual assault and the way their lives have gone since that moment, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt as this proud and gay man, and this other character that's really in denial about what happened to him and almost in a way of discovering his sexuality. And I mean, it's a very powerful movie, very underrated in my eyes. I think Tangerine, the LA movie that was out a few years ago, I think was excellent as well. Blue is the Warmest Color. Adele, I can't pronounce it properly, I'm not going to risk it. I think that is a really good movie, as it is almost like the long game of a lesbian romance, but I think it does have that thing that you spoke about, and I never really kind of thought about it in a way that you can tell there's almost that kind of, it holds the gaze a lot more, that these lesbian sex scenes are much more well represented than probably what reality is. It's kind of a bit on the nose in a way. Other things have kind of come to my head. Tomboy was a very good one. The Kids Are All Right.
That was a good one. As some people take issue with that, the fact that she has an affair with Mark Ruffalo, but I didn't think it was a case of turning a gay character straight.
No, I think the problem is that. This is when it almost becomes a bit of an issue that, yes, we want better representation of gay characters as well, but we almost forget about, say, bisexual people.
Right.
That people can be in a relationship with a female and then have an affair with a man. And it can go rightwise, that just as a male can have an affair with a female, it doesn't necessarily mean it's just the one person and it's a compromise on the character, that we have this lesbian character and now you've, you know, put them back, of course, with the white heterosexual male. That can happen, that which sometimes it almost gets back into that thing that we almost just, people polarize things. It's one or the other. Sometimes people fall down the middle, and like bisexual characters probably in a way are the most underrepresented in recent years, that we can make a list of gay characters, both female and male, but how many properly bisexual characters, not just someone going, oh, I was straight but now I've realized I'm gay, like proper bisexual that flirt between the two sexualities. So I think that The Kids Were All Right was then that's another movie that you almost thought at the time, oh, it's going to open the gates. It was well represented in the Oscars.
You had major actresses playing gay characters in Annette Bening and Julianne Moore.
Exactly, and it was fantastic. It was very, I thought, relatively a very realistic movie. You looked at it and thought it wasn't overly dramatic and over the top. I think it really was an excellent portrayal. What about yourself, Matt? Any movies that you've seen or things that have kind of always stuck with you that's represented the gay community or gay characters?
Mostly, like I said, the big one for me was Imitation Game. That struck me in a year where I was not expecting to take to that movie as much as I did, but I really felt a connection with that film, mostly because I wasn't as socially awkward as Alan Turing was portrayed in that film, but I certainly was socially awkward growing up, so I really found myself connecting with that film. I have seen Mysterious Skin, actually, because I had heard, someone had turned me on to that film, and they certainly don't shy away from the sex scenes in that film. But it is very independent cinema. But it was good. I did enjoy that. See, it's hard to say because I don't get to watch as much indie cinema as you do. I loved The Kids Are Alright. I think for me, just because, in my opinion, because I have a lot of friends who are gay. I've gone to nightclubs and all that sort of stuff. I've been to drag shows. Sometimes I think it's important, and it's actually okay, to, as we are looking for better representation in the Hollywood cinema, and certainly it's warranted. I think we could go for more downplayed representation in terms of wackiness, but sometimes I feel it's okay to be wacky, and it's okay to acknowledge that there is a stereotype, and I think that we as a community needed to stop and be able to laugh at ourselves a little bit. Because everybody else does it. Why not us? I mean, one of the things that me and my friends love to watch, because it's always on Netflix and we always have a good time and quote and everything, is The Birdcage.
Oh, yeah.
From 96. And like I said, that is played for more wackiness. And, you know, but when you think about it, it came out in the mid-90s. Which, you know, and I think the year it came out was actually the year they passed the Defense of Marriage Act here in America. So it was a hot button issue at the time. So the fact that there was a mainstream movie with gay male characters in it that were played by, you know, prestigious actors was a big deal. It was a big deal. And, yeah, like I said, it's played more for laughs, but those stereotypes do exist. And
they certainly do. I mean, I joke about it that I've got friends that are gay, lesbian. I work professionally with people that are asexual, trans. I've done some professional work with someone that was dealing with coming out, someone that that was born female but identified as male. Like, my social and professional circle is very diverse, and I sometimes joke with my friends when we're out, because when all your friends are pretty much gay and lesbian, you end up going to these gay clubs, and I mean, I probably go to them more than I would what you would call the normal clubs, you know?
Actually, because I've had a few people who are straight go to them, and usually they've said that they've had a better time at the gay clubs than they
the music's always better. The music's always better. And I've had friends when I've said, oh, you know, come along with us and all that, and I'm like, oh, you know, will I be accepted there? Yeah, of course. Like, no one really cares, because at the end of the day, yeah, it's a gay club, and it's people are there to perhaps meet people of the same sex, as the same as heterosexuals look to meet people in clubs.
Besides, I would say too that even though you know you don't even necessarily need to be gay to go, if you're a man, but if you just want to feel good about yourself, go, you know, and if you're a straight man, go to the gay club. You'll probably have a good time, and you'll probably get told that you're an attractive person. So, an ego boost.
Exactly. I always remember that. Like, I've got a friend, and he's not that's the stereotype, but he's that kind of the loud, fantastic. He's the fast talking, quoting kind of gay guy that we all see in some TV and
flamboyant.
Movies. And it is he's flamboyant as they come. And even though it is a bit, even though it can be a stereotype in films, because it doesn't, there's not very much nuance when it comes to gay characters at times, that it is a stereotype that is real, and it's part of the culture in a way that I'm not a fan of it. But my girlfriend, she watches it religiously with her LGBT friends, is like programs like Drag Race, which I really think, despite the fact it's not my cup of tea, I find it a little bit irritating,
right?
Because it seems to be like more product placement than a James Bond movie.
Sure.
I think things like that do help as well, that they give people like an avenue, that drag queens and all these different people that when I grew up, it was like kind of a funny thing that you would see in Europe, that you would go abroad and you would see, oh, look, it's the drag queen bar. Oh, look, it's a guy dressed as a woman. And it's kind of funny. But it was a novelty. But then in the past few years, since this program's kind of come about, there has been that cultural shift where there's these drag queens and you get the lingo. And it has been hugely accepted. I mean, you will get them in, like, they're more popular in Glasgow, but you'll get the stars of Drag Race, all that will come over from America. And they're like £40 a ticket. And they sell out. And it's not just gay people going along. Half my straight friends are going along and they're in on the jokes and the laughs and all that sort of stuff. And things like that, while I'm not a fan of the show myself, it's not my cup of tea, is pushing and opening doors for acceptance. And, you know, it's almost like in the 90s when you black culture really kind of spiked up in kind of white neighbourhoods, that people like Eminem and everyone was kind of... You had all these white middle-class kids that were rapping away, yeah. And you see a lot of that now. I think programs like the drag races do have a huge important part to play, and that when they're getting all this money, you know, going into these gay clubs, and it's being invested in providing places for gay people to come and have fun, and straight people like myself, but it's providing a safe place. It's keeping these places funded, because we, especially in these current climates, it's so hard to keep a pub and a club open. So if these drag shows are as keeping popular, then it's good for the gay community to have these safe places, and hopefully places like Orlando, even though it's a horrific thing that's happened, that all these other gay clubs around the world continue to stay open, continue to be a safe place for people to go and to have fun. That, you know, I would hate the consequence of what happened to be that we lose these places, because, you know, the music's great. It's a safe place where people can feel right. Relaxed, that they can be themselves, that they can be that stereotype that you talk about. So I think that we will see more continuing shifts in the culture, and it's really more the politics side, I think, has got a longer way to go than perhaps the Hollywood and geek culture has to go, really, in making it a more inclusive place.
Certainly, and I think, you know, this is a perfect transition to wrap up this discussion, in the sense that I think what we're saying here, and certainly how I want to come down on this issue, is you may not necessarily change anybody's mind with greater representation in Hollywood, but like drag shows and like, you know, people, straight people want, you know, being okay with going to gay clubs, I think just the visibility of positive gay characters in Hollywood cinema, while you may not change anybody's mind, it's harder, you know, it's harder to be afraid or hate something when it becomes personal. Like I know people who were kind of homophobic when they were younger, and then they've either had a gay friend or been around gay people, and that's had a profound influence on how they view the community. So you may not change everybody's mind, but by being visible in cinema, you certainly will get people exposed to something that they thought was seedy and disgusting, and if you represent it as normal, that might go a long way in influencing people's thoughts. So I think that's how Hollywood can do the most good, and that's why representation is important.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just beautifully put. And from my point for wrapping up, that I think that the best way is that the people that are largely spouting off anti-LGBT comments and, you know, being anti, like I think of, like in Scotland, we had, there was the big campaign and push for gay marriage, and it went through. But the people that were campaigning against it were a much older generation. And while you won't perhaps win a fight changing their hearts and minds, it's always the generations that are continuing to come up that, you know, drown them out eventually, that the voice and opportunity for influence is always with them, that when people are younger and they're watching, even if it's a cartoon program, whether it's a program when they're teenagers like Buffy, or when it's they become in their 20s and having these kind of independent movies, and hopefully larger movies where there is gay and lesbian representation, that they grow up and they see these things as just normal. That's just the way it is, that John being gay is just the same as Kathy being straight in a movie. That representation is normal, it's not a big deal. There are episodes that perhaps talk about it, but that's the same as heterosexual relationships. It's there will always be time to focus on it, but it's always going to be about influences, those minds that when you look at things like the politics of the UK, America, all that, the youth of today is so invigorated to make sure that people have that equality, that people are integrated, that they do believe in the rainbow atmosphere, that things like Twitter have brought together, you know, communities that where someone would have been perhaps one of the few gays in their village or town now has a whole community that they can access, that people now perhaps know someone that's gay and lesbian thanks to things like Twitter, Facebook, the online community, that there are forums as well. Let's make sure that we are also catching up with Hollywood is catching up with all this internet thing that's making the world a smaller place for people. Let's make sure that it's not just Hollywood that representation is not going to be in. And, you know, I think hopefully in a few years' time, if we're still doing this podcast, that we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of different movies, that we're not just going to be talking about perhaps Captain America. We're going to be talking about Captain America and this new gay character that's in the movie. We're going to be talking about this new big franchise that's kicked off with a gay character. And I believe that will happen. I hope it does. So we'll certainly find out in the next few years, but let's just hope that the lives of people that have been lost, you know, aren't lost in the rain, that the fight continues to go on and people think twice. You know, is money always the most important factor? Is appeasing certain markets always the right thing? You know, go with your heart, go with what people surround you. You know, these people deserve everything as much as anyone else does.
Right, and we certainly got your back here at the Nerd Party, and this was a great discussion. This was, we got a lot out of this, and I feel like we've had a good time talking to you. So we want to hear your thoughts on this for sure. And there are a number of ways to contact us. You, of course, can reach us on our Facebook page whenever we post these new episodes. And then me and Lee are personally on Twitter. I'm at mhanson0207, and Lee,
I'm at Lee_Nostromo, and you can find us on at Join Nerd Party on Twitter as well. We've also got two other podcasts on the go. There's obviously The Senate Floor with you and Tristan. You do your lists. We've got The Jedi Masters, you know, obviously Star Wars. There's some talk that there could be a gay character in the future there. You know, maybe that'll be something that'll come up on their show.
And let's not forget about Nerd Nuptial.
Nerd Nuptial as well, yeah. We may talk about, you know, the need for a gay relationship, but one of my favorite heterosexual relationships is Tristan and the girl, so it's always good to get their opinions as well. So there's plenty of ways to find us, and, you know, hopefully we can continue to bring you a diverse range of films and cultures and ideas. And, you know, I think that as a geek community have our part to play too, and, you know, hopefully you and our listeners as well can continue to help and do what we can in our own little way as well.
Yep, and thank you so much, Lee, for joining me on this and leading this discussion. This was awesome. Thank you, listeners, for joining us and listening to us. And until next time, keep the pride.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Did you know your disability allowance can get you from here to here via here? Just pop down to your local Ford dealer during our mobility open days between the 23rd and 26th of June to explore your options with one of our mobility specialists. And you could soon be going places.
The world's mine oyster!
Exactly. Unlearn freedom with Ford Mobility. Go to ford.co.uk/mobilityopendays to find out more. Four mobility open days are available at participating dealers to customers eligible to receive the Disability Living Allowance or Personal Independence Payment.